Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello and welcome to Is It My ADHD? The podcast about what it really feels like to have attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. My name is Grace Timothy and I'm a writer. I wasn't diagnosed with ADHD until I was 37, after years of struggling with difficult traits and behaviours that I could never understand. Just like the 2 million women thought to be living with undiagnosed ADHD in the UK today. I want to better understand what ADHD feels like for women and non-binary people, in whom ADHD is so often missed, thanks to the fact that the diagnostic criteria and research is heavily skewed to the white male case study. On this podcast, I speak to some incredible people about their lived experience of ADHD, looking at how it can affect relationships, work, parenthood, socialising, and self-esteem. My hope is that we can spread awareness of ADHD in women and non-binary people, and that you'll find some comfort in knowing you're far from being alone. Because with the right support and understanding, we can be truly amazing. Hello again, and welcome back to Is It My ADHD? Following on from last week's part one episode on ADHD burnout, here is the rest of our chat with Stacey Heal. If this is the first you've heard, it's worth heading back to listen to part one. The link is in the notes below, or simply search Is It My ADHD? And now, back to my chat with Stacey. What do you do next? You didn't see it coming either, which is scary. Hopefully I would see it more now. And I think having Dr. Moe's list of symptoms is almost quite helpful to be able to like somehow pathologize it in a weird way.
So what did he say those symptoms are?
So first of all, he said obviously that people with ADHD will burn out more quickly. Anyone can have burnout. We know this, like you don't have to have ADHD or autism or anything else to have it. But the point is that because we are taking so much more effort and mental work to do what could be seen as like effortless to other people, there's just, you know, a quicker build up. And actually, he used this amazing analogy, which is so true. If you imagine two people lifting the same weights, but one person has got invisible weights on their ankles and wrists, so their muscles will fatigue more quickly. They will not be able to achieve the same as the other person. And that's kind of ADHD. So he said in terms of the build up, the actual physical symptoms, obviously it's putting a lot of stress on the nervous system. So you might have loss of appetite, poor quality of sleep, high blood pressure, high pulse rate, headaches, blurred vision, being irritable, feeling agitated. And then burnout in sort of comparison is where it's basically symptoms of depression. So it's lack of interest in things. I want to say ennui, but I don't know how to pronounce it.
It's
like the lack of joy in anything, isn't it? So E-N-N-U-I,
yeah.
I don't know.
Ennui.
You say it much nicer. I can't get my mouth around that. Loss of appetite, disturbed sleep, but crucially, the brain slowing down so that you don't process information as quickly or as efficiently or as correctly, which, mind blown. And his whole thing is that we need to support people in the build up to burnout so that it doesn't ever get to that point, because that point can be long term, you know, which is so scary. And also that's when you go to your doctor and your doctor goes, oh, you're depressed, so we'll put you on an antidepressant.
Yeah, absolutely. I was thinking about this when I was thinking that we were going to have this chat. I was thinking about this idea of burnout, and it feels like a modern term. And I was thinking about what would it have been referred to in the past. Is that the same thing as the old school nervous breakdown?
It's not hysteria, is it? It's something sort of slower than that. But I think depression that's what it would have been looked at as. This is what Dr. Moe was saying, because it does present as depression once you've reached that burnout point.
Yeah. I wrote on Instagram recently about the idea of wanting to be ill in order to have a rest. And I can't tell you of how many women sent me messages. They were like, oh my God.
I did.
Oh my God.
My first bout of COVID, which was horrible and it was quite severe for all three of us, was honestly bliss.
Yeah.
Like,
isn't that strange?
And I can say that with privilege that I had like the basic health that I was not vulnerable and all that stuff. So it wasn't scary. But like being in bed for 2 weeks and watching TV and not sharing that with anyone, you know, that was like, we just don't do that for ourselves. That was really good. And I think that this burnout, if I'd known it was burnout and if I'd like checked myself properly out of life for a bit to recover, that probably would have been really helpful. But you don't see it. I think if you haven't got a stomach upset or a broken leg or something like that, it's hard.
That's the thing, isn't it? It's about the visibility of it. And even though mental health issues, if you're talking about things like anxiety or depression, even if we talk about that way more openly now, even that thinking of like, oh, I'm having a bit of a difficult time, I'm just going to take some time to rest. I don't think people even do that now, even though we're much more used to talking about those and supporting people and accepting that. I still don't think people are that good at saying, do you know what? I'm really struggling at the moment. I'm just going to have a bit of time out.
Maybe the next generation are better at it. I know when I talk to younger people on the podcast, so women in their sort of 20s, there does seem to be more of a sense of like, not only am I talking about it in a different way, but I'm looking after myself.
Yeah.
Better, maybe. But I think also, again, when you've got a boss, are you going to say to them, like, I'm having a mental health day? Like, yeah. There are lots of people who would not accept that.
So I think, like, the question you just asked there of, like, what can I do to prevent this from happening again? I don't know. Maybe my own experiences have really led me personally to think, I've just got to tell people what's going on for me.
Yeah.
Because if they don't know, I'm so good at hiding it. I'm so good at putting on a very capable face that if I don't tell people, they won't know. So, but it is vulnerable, isn't it? Especially if you're talking about capability.
Yeah.
As you know, in a workplace, as a woman, it's a big deal. But I think in those situations, you'd have to judge it, but most people are going to go, oh, okay, thank you for telling me. How can I help?
And by the way, I hadn't noticed.
Oh, like, yeah.
You're not fucking it up.
I mean, that's the thing as well, isn't it? Like, in my head, I was saying, oh my God, everyone must be looking at me like, fucking hell, why did we employ her? When actually, it was like, no, you're fine. Hadn't noticed, but things are, blown
we
up in your own.
Yeah.
Yeah, blown up in your own head.
Yeah, completely. Do you feel like, are there intersections with grief and burnout? Like, do you have an emotional burnout at some point? Because I can't imagine.
Well, I think what happened for me is that when my husband, Greg, was ill and he had cancer, and that was for 5 years. So that was a long time to be on this treadmill of being a carer, having two really small young kids, obviously undiagnosed ADHD as well. But I went into this mania in terms of, firstly, I was raising money because there were treatments that weren't available on the NHS that we could access if we paid for them ourselves. So I went into this overdrive of raising money. And I was like you, I was answering. There was one day where I think I answered maybe 5,000 emails. I'm not even joking. I was into the night, and I was powered by a motor because I had this, you know, there's not much more of a fire up your ass than death, of like, I've just got to make this happen. I've got to give us the best chance that we can. And I think I kept that going and going. And even when Greg was kind of coming towards the end of his life, I was still then just like, I've got to like give him the best end of his life that he could possibly have. I've got to organise all these things. And then with his funeral, I mean, when I organised his funeral, I had COVID. I got COVID for the first time straight after he died. All of my family did. And I organised his funeral from a camp bed at my parents' house, on the phone to all of these people, organising this kind of beautiful piece of artwork of his to be printed, and all these different separate elements, because, and it was that thing of like, this is going to be the best funeral because he deserves it, and this big, big, big thing. And I think that after that, I mean, after the 5 years of like keeping going, I think I just kind of went, like you said. And I think I'm, there's part of me that's almost still in that, because it was pretty much that time that I also got a book deal. So I think it was like, okay, we're still on the treadmill. We're still, well, and now I'm a solo parent. Everything's on me. Financially, we need to be thinking about having some security. I'd given up my job to, I had a full-time job as a fashion lecturer. I'd given that up to look after Greg. So I had no income. So I was like, got to get on the treadmill, got to keep working. And it's actually now, weirdly, after a conversation recently with Stacey Duguid, she said to me, be wary of the quiet after the book publication.
Oh my God, yes.
Because that is your danger point. And I think even I've had therapists before that had said when Greg was ill, they had seen enough of me to say, you need to be very careful in the aftermath of everything, because I'm so good in the fight. In the crisis, I am the person you want on the front line, because I can, it's like I can zone out, especially now after everything that happened to Greg. It's like I am the master, you know, give me a crisis and I can streamline everybody and I can get big things done. It's the quiet moments that get me, because that's when I fall apart. And I think I need to find that balance, because at the moment I'm trying to do all these different things and it's great and it's exciting and it's, I'm really energized by it, but I'm also, like you said at the beginning, of like, there's a payoff. And the payoff will be your sanity, your physical health, your mental health. And but it is about that balance and how to regulate that. But at the same time thinking, I need to, you know, I need the money. I need that security for my children. I'm always now thinking, this is me and us. And no one else is providing for me and them.
Yeah.
So I kind of have to keep going.
I guess like you also get better at stuff, don't you? So like, I'm sure your lecturing job, because you've been doing it a while, there's shorthand there to a degree.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. I think, yeah, there's, I was talking to a colleague only this week about saying, you could give me a sentence and I could go and deliver, I wouldn't need any notes. I could go and do an hour's lecture.
Yeah.
I could go and talk about it. I have that muscle memory. Mm. So yeah, there's that. But there's also, you know, with all of these jobs, there's a lot of personal energy that has to come from that, whether that's lecturing, teaching, writing. Mm. And it's, I suppose, what I'm not so good at, and this is my danger point to do with burnout, is I'm not so good at refueling myself.
Yes.
And it's not just about rest or sleep or food. It's about enjoyment,
yeah,
and life and friends and conversation and experiences. It's that kind of stuff. I think, I don't know, that comes from me maybe being in like a fight or flight mode for so long.
You really have, yeah.
That I feel like you get, even if you are in a bad situation, you can get comfortable there.
Yeah.
You know it. It's something that you know. And I'm really aware of that. And that's not necessarily a great place to be.
But it's so like, it's what we went back to at the very beginning, to feel like you're good at something, even if that is crisis management. And if that's helping people, because I'm sure people flood your inbox with messages. Like, yes, you're giving so much of yourself all the time. So even after the book comes out, I mean, that silence is not always going to be there, but the silence that you need isn't there either. Like,
do you know what? That's really true, actually, is that maybe I need that space, actually.
Yeah.
And, well, no, not maybe. I do need that space. And you're right. I do definitely have a very, very big exchange with people, that I give a lot of myself and then I take on a lot of other people's stuff. But for me, that is my fuel. I thrive off that. Do you know what? It's why I love teaching. I love working with young people and talking about ideas and that exchange. That really energizes me. But you're right, it's only when you're in those quiet moments that you can really hear yourself.
Yeah.
And what you need. or what you're trying to say to yourself, whatever that is.
Your clinical diagnosis is that you can't filter out noise, distractions, etc. Like, that's the bare bones of ADHD. So if there are too many noises and stuff, then that voice within you is just further and further and further away from what you can hear.
Yeah.
Like, that's so much. But also that fuel idea of working out what your fuel is, that's huge. Because, like, I know, like, for some people, going bowling will just... I mean, I would rather not.
I love that that's your first example.
I was just thinking, what am I going to do? Like, what would my kid like to do? What would Rich like to do? What can we all do together to refuel? And I don't know why I just went straight to bowling. I hate every bit of bowling.
Do you?
Yeah, for example. So what I'm saying is I need to find something that's, like, refueling for me, but you can't always do that selfishly, can you, on your own as well? Like, you need to be with other people sometimes.
Yeah, and maybe that is the thing, is that if you find out what that is for you,
yeah,
then you need to prioritize that.
I wonder what it is.
Do you have any idea?
It used to be like going out, like clubbing.
Oh, okay.
That would refuel, which is weird because that's very noisy and, like, interactive and takes a lot out of you.
Yeah, but you know what? That used to be mine. I was a real party girl and would go anywhere with anybody.
Yeah.
It was about, and that was the energy for me, all of that. But now, it just makes me tired to think about.
Same, I don't want to do anything. Yeah, I have no idea what it is. And I think that in that post-burnout period, that would be, or even just in the build-up, it would be really great to know what that is, wouldn't it? That it's not, it can't be work. Because for me, I was like, oh, I'm just going to do a bit more work. I'll pick my laptop up tonight because that refuels me. And it does, but probably not in a healthy way.
That's true, isn't it? That idea of something being a healthy thing. Mm. Like, I sometimes have a thing where if I've just been so busy and so overwhelmed with ideas and thoughts of what I've got to do, I will, in the evening, often grab my phone.
Yeah.
And my way of thinking that I'm de-stressing and regulating myself is to either go on Instagram or Vinted and just do this kind of mad... Oh, look at your face.
Same.
And it's like this deep dive. I don't necessarily scroll on Instagram so much, but I will think of something and I'll go, oh, I need to go and look at this. And then I will be searching for these things. And it's the same on Vinted. And it's this, it's like letting myself fall down a rabbit hole. And it's almost like I can feel myself physically do it. Mm. And it does something to my brain, definitely, which is something that I need. But I can't imagine that spending a couple of hours looking at a phone with its blue light right before bed and that kind of mindlessness of it It's a bit like you really need a drink of water, but you're just drinking Coke.
Yeah.
It might satiate your thirst, but actually it's not really.
I just feel like we might need to play tennis or something.
Oh, God. I don't want to. Is that what we've got to do?
I don't know. It's got to be outside probably, because that's what everyone says.
Fuck.
I know. I don't want to do that either. I think also, like, just our lives in a capitalist society are geared around production, productivity, all of those things, right? So it's very hard. I find it very hard to separate myself from that and go, like, what's the healthy thing? But also because most of the healthy things are things that I've been told I can't do. So even, like, I watch my kid will go and, like, do a bit of piano practice. And that, as a child, I would have to be forced to do any of that sort of thing. And it took me 7 years to get to grade 2 recorder after various other instruments were ditched. Oh my
God, yeah, but I'm
ditched.
I'm astounded that you did recorder for 7 years.
Honestly, because no one told me not to. If you had said recorder's a bit lame, or if you don't enjoy it, you should stop. But just, I was just so accepting of, like, rules and, like, do your recorder. Okay, I'm here, my recorder for 7 years. Even though, like, I would never tell anyone I played recorder. Are you kidding me? I would have been, like, beaten up. Anyway, the point is, like, I will see her, like, enjoying that process and getting lost in it and stuff. I was told for years I was rubbish at that stuff. So, like, that would never bring me joy. Same sports, tennis, swimming, you know. Actually, I'm pretty good at swimming, let's be honest. But, like, all of those competitive sports, no. Running, no, because I run like Phoebe. Like, none of it is a good idea. None of it's bringing me joy because I'm incapable again. And, like, what joy can I possibly get outside of that?
Oh, yeah. What award can I get for this? What medal am I getting?
Who's going to tell me I'm good at it?
Yeah.
It's so true, because even, like... If, you know, like, we're trying to do, like, little family runs now. We'll see how long this lasts. And if I go a little bit faster than Rich and he goes, oh, wow, you, like, really powered through today. I'm like, oh, sorry, What? I think you need to email that to my mum. And like, that's all it takes. Like, it's so bad. It's hard when you've been told that you're shit at all those things, but also that you only want to do things that you're not shit at. But I think like in terms of that piece around recovery and just avoiding burnout stuff, I think that that's the trickiest thing. And that's what I'm most interested in. Like, definitely get in touch with both of us if, you know, you do have any secrets around what you do.
Yes.
But I also feel like it's so different for each person. Like, we know that ADHD is not a monolith, but like you going to a spa will relax you. Me, not so much. Like, it's, you know, there just isn't a one size fits all, is there? It's just suck it and see.
Mm. Have you accepted that ADHD is a disability?
Yeah. I think in the sense of a disability is something that makes it harder to be in the current society as it stands, that adaptations need to be made in order to accommodate your needs. Am I like fully in that period of accepting those adaptations? No. So I was like, I don't need adaptations. I don't need coaching and stuff. Like, none of that is actually going to benefit me because I've already got my coping mechanisms. I've got my color-coded diaries and online, you know, reminders and all that stuff. But I do now see that I am going to need support and help in certain ways. And also just the support that I think we all need in unpicking an adult diagnosis of like the trauma response has been there for such a long time that you know, it's not going away overnight. So yeah, I do think it's a disability. I do, yeah.
I wonder if it manifests itself a little bit like a badly healed break of a bone.
Yes.
In that you hobble on, you learn to walk with it, but then something later will happen in your hip because you've done your own adjustments that have then possibly fucked something else.
Yeah. And also you start off gingerly when you first start walking, don't you? So that you don't like make it worse, and then you forget because it stops hurting, and then you just run and then you're fucked. Yeah, completely. I think my thing is like, I'm very happy to take that on myself, but I need to be aware of the people around me, particularly kids. Other children are probably fine, I would imagine. That's where I get really worried about it. But I think also I need to stop thinking it's fine for me to just carry on, because actually your longevity is affected. Like, we know blood pressure is affected. On the really basic biological level, constant burnout cycles are not good for you. And it will get worse as you get older because your body's just not as resilient and robust as it was. So yeah, I need to invest in working out what to do, I think. But at the moment I'm just gingerly padding along, I think. No adaptations whatsoever. But I encourage everyone, obviously, to do those things I'm not doing.
Everyone else should do those things.
Yeah, I fully support that. Yeah. And I will do it. I think it's just like, I'm still not mentally as well in the space of looking too deeply into how bad it was and how impaired I am. I'm not, it makes me kind of cross and upset.
Well, I wonder if maybe just even having this chat now might have, I don't know, unpacked a little bit in your brain for you to be able to process it a little bit further.
For sure. I think so. I think like, what I still can't let go of is that like, I'm so happy being vulnerable with you, and I'm happy being vulnerable with the listeners and all those kind of things. I think it's just like, I need to learn that. Am I still coming across as being sharp and clever and all those things at work that I need to be? Like, I don't want to compromise on that. Like, how do I do that better whilst also protecting my peace a bit more? That's where the trouble is.
Good old work-life balance.
I mean, who has that nailed? Like, surely nobody.
Yeah, I think nobody.
No.
I think nobody at all.
Well, I think this has been the most amazing cathartic experience. I kind of knew it was a bit like free therapy. And I feel bad exploiting you in such a way, but
do you know
my gosh.
Yeah, but it's so fascinating to have this space to be able to talk really in-depth about this stuff, because I think it is, like I said, about when you are vulnerable and you do share, that's when you start to go, oh yeah, me too. I really get that. And it makes you feel less alone.
100%.
Which can only be a good thing.
Thank you, Stacey Heal.
Oh, no worries, guys.
Thank you for listening to this very special episode of Is It My ADHD? In case you missed it, part one is also available on your podcast platforms, where Stacey and I discuss what went down last year, what burnout really feels like, and just how sneaky it can be.
We would love it if you could follow the podcast and leave a review, as it means more people will see it popping up. Plus, you'll hear whenever new episodes are released, which I'm so happy to share, we're already working on. Thanks for your patience, for sticking around, and for being part of this incredible ADHD community with me. You can contact me via Instagram at Grace Timothy Writer, or is it my ADHD, to continue the conversation.